Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Rob, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's program. And this program is done in partnership with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. And the title of this program is The Benefits of Clinical Trials for Triple Negative Breast Cancer. And this program is made possible by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, Gilead, and an independent grant from Merck and Company, Inc., and I really want to thank them for their support of this program. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, I have two things I want to do. First, I want to let you know that there are over 203 participants on this call today. And we also have, and people come mostly from the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. But we also have a number of international participants from Afghanistan, Canada, Guatemala, Pakistan, the Philippines, Poland, South Africa, and Uganda, and the United Kingdom. So we really have quite a large global participation as well in this program. And I want to give credit to each of you for choosing to spend this next hour with us to learn more about the benefits of clinical trials for triple negative breast cancer. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Kamal Abu Hussein. And Dr. Hussein is Assistant Professor of Medicine, Cooper Medical School at Rowan University, Adjunct Assistant Professor, Department of Breast Medical Oncology, MD Anderson Cancer Center, co-director of the Janet Knowles Breast Cancer Program, director of Breast Cancer Clinical Trials, MD Anderson Cancer Center at Cooper. And Dr. Hussein will be addressing the treatment of triple negative breast cancer, why clinical trials are important as a treatment option for triple negative breast cancer, new research in the treatment of triple negative breast cancer, and investigational new drugs in clinical trials. It's really my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Hussein.
Thank you so much for the kind presentation, Dr. Messner, and I hope everybody is having a good start of the new year. So talking about triple negative breast cancer, I think this continues to be the subtype of breast cancer with the most challenges. It is that subtype that has higher rates of recurrence. And when we look at that disease, it is typically defined by the lack of expression of targetable proteins such as estrogen, progesterone receptors, and also the absence of the HER2 amplification. And all of this made us rely on cytotoxic chemotherapy for decades because we didn't have any targets to develop drugs against. Now, besides those three targets that are tested on every breast cancer biopsy, we tried to look for other identifying markers which could help us further dissect triple negative breast cancer based on their potential response to different therapeutic options. Examples of that are the PD-L1 testing, which is a test that is intended to identify patients who could potentially benefit from the use of immunotherapy in combination with chemotherapy. And another one is germline BRCA mutation, which helps us identify a hereditary predisposition to developing breast cancer with the presence of BRCA1 or BRCA2 mutations. And that probably constitutes somewhere around 10% of the patient population diagnosed with metastatic triple negative breast cancer. And this opens up the door for treatment options that are called PARP inhibitors. And then there are now a new category of triple negative breast cancer called the HER2 low. And as the same implies, it identifies a group of patients who have low expression of the HER2 protein, so they are not HER2 positive, and those are potential candidates for treatment with one of the antibody-drug conjugates called trastuzumab deruxtecan, also known as Enhertu. But it's very important to note that one of the major goals of clinical research for triple-negative breast cancer is to allow us to personalize or individualize the treatment for each patient based on their tumor characteristics, their health status, and other comorbidities or diseases they do have, so that we are trying to balance the benefits in terms of improving survival of patients, shrinking the size of the tumor, and improving quality of life against potential risks from the side effects that we might encounter from each choice of therapy. Another factor that should definitely be considered is the burden of the disease, the location of the cancer in the body, finances, so financial toxicity, and the patient's preference. All of that would allow us to select one option over the other in terms of scheduling, route of administration, how long should the therapy go on for, and types of side effects that the patient would accept. So in previous workshops, we did review the results of the KEYNOTE-522 clinical trial, which is using four chemotherapy drugs that are combined with immunotherapy, and that is given before surgery for early-stage high-risk triple-negative breast cancer. When we did that, we've seen that there is an improvement in the ability of this cocktail of therapies to eliminate the cancer cells from the breast and the lymph nodes to a higher degree compared to the use of chemotherapy alone. So this has become the standard of care that is offered to most patients with stages 2 and 3 triple negative breast cancer. And of course, it is important to mention that with the addition of such drugs comes also serious treatment-related side effects that happens in about 30% of the cases. So from that, we concluded that the addition of pembrolizumab or Keytruda as an immunotherapy to chemotherapy drugs, including anthracyclines, taxanes, and platinums, did improve the success of this treatment regimen in eliminating the cancer cells, and it also improved the overall survival. Now, what about patients who cannot tolerate those drugs called anthracyclines, which are known to be toxic to the heart muscle? There was a trial called the NEOPACT trial, and that aimed at assessing the efficacy of anthracycline-free regimen in addition to the same immunotherapy, pembrolizumab. They used chemotherapy with two drugs. One of them is called docetaxel, and the other one is called carboplatin. And here they treated patients who had stage 1 to stage 3 triple negative breast cancer, and they give them one cycle every 3 weeks for a total of 6 cycles, and they were able to see a success in achieving this end result of pathologic complete response or elimination of the cancer cells in about 60% of the patients. And even when they followed patients for the first couple of years after the trial, the patients that had significant success, about 88% of those patients continued without evidence of disease recurrence, which is quite promising. We also have a similar trial called the KEYNOTE-355, which used immunotherapy in addition to chemotherapy, but for the metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. And here, we typically would use single-agent chemotherapies like Taxol or Abraxane, or combination chemotherapy like carboplatin and gemcitabine together. They compared it with the immunotherapy Keytruda or chemotherapy alone. And this trial showed that patients who are PD-L1 positive, they derive benefit from the combination of chemotherapy and immunotherapy. And in the trial, and really in practice, about 40% of our patients who have metastatic triple negative breast cancer are positive for that marker. So that's quite promising. We've seen that those patients that received immunotherapy in addition to chemotherapy remained longer on treatment. They had better control over their cancer and also lived longer, and that led to the approval of using immunotherapy plus chemotherapy by the FDA for the patients that are PD-L1 positive. Other important therapeutics. I think we've seen over the past decade the approval of two PARP inhibitors, which in essence are medications that interfere with the ability of the tumor cells to repair the DNA and therefore leading to the death of the tumor cells. And these PARP inhibitors, including olaparib and talazoparib, are approved for patients who have germline BRCA1 or BRCA2 mutations and have metastatic HER2-negative breast cancer. And that includes, of course, triple-negative breast cancer. And that approval came from two trials. One of them is Olympiad, and the other one is IMbraca trial that showed that PARP inhibitors compared to standard of care chemotherapy did really lead to a superior outcome in stopping the tumor from progressing for a longer period of time, and it also improved quality of life. And now there have also been emerging data supporting the use of PARP inhibitors in other patients who have other germline mutations like PALB2, in addition to BRCA1, BRCA2, and also somatic mutations with higher rates of response in shrinking the size of the tumor. One important concept is ADCs, or antibody-drug conjugate, and this is designed to improve the delivery of the cytotoxic chemotherapy to the cancer cells. And many studies have shown that they have improved efficacy over the traditional chemotherapy, and it is a smart approach that basically develops a monoclonal antibody, so an antibody, to a surface marker on the surface of the cancer cell that is linked to a molecule of chemotherapy. Once this compound, the ADC, identifies this marker on the surface of the cancer cell, it attaches itself to it, and it throws this chemotherapy inside the cell, and this leads to internal killing of the cancer cell or killing of the cancer cell from within. And we really have two approved ADCs for use of metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. One of them is sacituzumab govitecan, also known as Trodelvy, and the other one is called Enhertu, also known as trastuzumab deruxtecan. And both of those agents were studied in large phase 3 trials that led to an improvement in the progression of the disease and overall survival. There is an ongoing trial called the I-SPY 2.2, which is really quite promising. It's a large, very large trial, and it's exploring the role of multiple different therapeutics. One learned lesson from that trial is another antibody-drug conjugate called Dirubotamab deruxtecan, also referred to as Dato-DXd, that has a lot of promising data being studied in the adjuvant setting or after surgery, neoadjuvant before surgery, or in the metastatic setting, alone or in combination with other therapeutics like immunotherapy. I know that I'm reaching my time, so I will be respectful of that, but one thing that I wanted to mention is clinical trials are used to determine if any of those treatments or any of those approaches could be safe and if they are effective. There are multiple stages of clinical trial, and everything that we discussed, including the advances that became the current standard of care or the ongoing research that is conducted in order to improve the available treatment, is based off of clinical trials. And I think that we would be at a point here of being a good segue for Dr. Mazza's part, who will focus more on the concept of clinical trials and what we need to know about that. With that, I want to thank you for your attention, and I will pass it back to Dr. Mesner.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Hussain. That was just a stellar presentation, and you covered a lot of topics in a very timely way, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Mazo, and Dr. Mazo is Assistant Professor of Medicine, Division of Hematology Oncology, Breast Medical Oncology, UT Health, San Antonio, Mays Cancer Center. And Dr. Mazo will be addressing what happens in a clinical trial stages of clinical trials, the meaning of informed consent, benefits and risks of participation, how to participate in clinical trials, specific questions to ask your healthcare team about clinical trials, and how and where clinical trials are conducted, accessing resources for clinical trials. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Mazel.
Dr. Mesner, thank you so much for the invitation, and thank you for your audience and for connecting today and to hear us speak, and it's a pleasure for me to be here with all of you today. So we were going to start our discussion talking about how does a clinical trial work or how does it get developed. So usually the development of clinical trials happens in stages, and there is four stages that we will describe. So there is a phase called phase one. This initial phase usually focuses on safety of a medication and the proper dose. Usually these trials will recruit in between 50 to around 50 patients. Then the clinical trial can evolve into a phase two, which is a phase in which we focus on effectiveness of a medication and potential side effects of that medication. Usually those will enroll about 100 patients or maybe less than that. Then it evolves into a phase three clinical trial that basically compares a new treatment with an existing treatment. And usually in these cases, we get more people, so hundreds of people, to see if the new therapy is better to the existing therapy. And then we evolve into a phase four, which is when the treatment is approved and available to everybody, but we're looking to see if there's any long-term effects that are observed that we need to be aware of. And usually for this phase, there is thousands of people that are enrolled in this clinical trials. Now let's switch gears and let's focus on the meaning of informed consent. So what are the potential risks and benefits of participating on a clinical trial? So the informed consent is a document that ensures that you as an individual have the necessary information to make a voluntary, well-informed decision about whether you want to participate in a procedure, a study, or a specific treatment. This document will explain to you the purpose of the procedure or the research. It will expose to you the potential benefits, the potential risk and side effects, alternative options that you can discuss with your doctor, and it will also tell you that you have the right to either decline or withdraw from the study at any time that you wish. What are some of the benefits of participating in clinical trials? So first of all, the consent will allow you to make an informed decision, as I mentioned, about this therapy that is going to be given to you. It also helps you to build that closer relationship with it, where your treating team as they're offering you this option. It's also important to know that through clinical trials, we make advancements as far as getting new treatments available to our own patients. I will also highlight that all clinical trials are held to ethical standards, and clinical trials prioritize the autonomy and the dignity and the protections of the participants that voluntarily enrolled in them. Clinical trials also lead to improved outcomes. It is important to know that this is how we kind of move, you know, science forward and how we get new treatments for everybody. But since some of these clinical trials will have experimental interventions or medications, there are also some risks that we need to discuss with our audience. So obviously there are some medical risks as patients can have side effects or complications from a clinical trial. They can have an unknown or anticipated adverse outcome as a result of the participation in the clinical trial. They can go through stress just because they are trying a medication that is new. They can suffer with discomfort. They could be also some ambiguity in the outcomes that the patient gets, meaning some patients might get help by a clinical trial and some patients might not get the help or the outcome that they're waiting for. Now, how do you talk to your provider? What questions do you ask to your healthcare team when you're trying to discuss a potential clinical trial participation? And this point is very important. So it's important to understand what is the purpose of the clinical trial? What is the medication or what is the condition that is being studied in that clinical trial? what is the phase of the clinical trial? Is it a phase one, meaning that is a medication that is just in the initial phases of being studied? Is this a phase three in which we're comparing an existing treatment with a new treatment? It is important to discuss with your doctor if you are eligible for this clinical trial based on your medical history and your current health. And also it's important to clarify what are the steps that are involved in the screening process to see if you are eligible for the clinical trial or not. It is important to discuss what are the treatments, procedures, or different tests that you will have to undergo during the trial. What are the other options that you have available to you in the event that you don't want to go through those procedures? This is a very common concern. It's important to discuss with your doctor and your team. Are there placebos involved? Could you be assigned to a placebo group? I will say that nowadays this is usually not the case for ethical standards, but it's always a concern that our patients have that I invite them to discuss with their treating team. What are the potential benefits for you? How is this going to help your case? What are the known side effects of these medications that they're trying to get studied? Are they risk for any new complications? Also logistics, where will the trial take place? How is this going to affect the use of other medications? How long will you be on trial? It's important also to discuss the potential extra visits that our patients will have to undergo during the enrollment on the clinical trial. Most of the clinical trials sometimes will offer compensation and support for patients to be transported from and to the cancer center. It's important to ask if the sponsor can cover some of these expenses. And also about support. So who's going to be supporting you during the trial? Who's going to be calling you, or who can you call in the event that you have a problem or a question? Who should you call in the event of any side effect or any concern? Overall, clinical trials are important for, you know, cancer research. And although I discuss a wide variety of questions that you should ask to your team, I will say that as a medical oncologist that treats breast cancer patients, clinical trials bring an important benefit to the patient population that we try. And to me, every cancer patient should be on a clinical trial. How do we access these clinical trials and what resources do we have available to us? So there's different online databases that you could potentially look into to find a clinical trial that is suitable for you. So clinicaltrials.gov is one website that will have clinical trials available. The National Cancer Institute and the American Cancer Society also display in their website different clinical trials that might be available to people. Also, Dr. Messner with the Cancer Care Group that you have created, I know that that has been offered in your website as well as far as options for clinical trials or how to patients can engage with patient advocacy groups to find a clinical trial that suits their needs. So speaking of patient advocacy groups, a lot of the advocate groups have connections with the big cancer centers, and they could potentially help you to reach a specific institution that has a clinical trial that you're interested in. And also, and most important, talk to your doctor. They know your case best. If you're interested in participating in a clinical trial, they can point you in the right direction, or they can direct you to an institution that has that clinical trial open that is, it's good for you. I will highlight also that it's important for you as a patient to understand your diagnosis, that know that clinical trials is a way to move forward with cancer treatment, and you could potentially get the benefit from a clinical trial. It is important that when you're speaking with an investigator that you understand what your eligibility is, if you are a good candidate for the trial, and talk to the supporting staff in the clinic to make sure that you have everything that you could potentially need. That is kind of my summary that I wanted to present to all of you today. I'm proud to be in cancer research as a principal investigator too. And as I said, clinical trials hold the answer to the battle that we're all trying to fight when it comes to solving cancer. Thank you, Dr. Messner, for the kind invitation.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Omeza. That was just a wonderful presentation, quite stellar. And you really did go over all the details of the clinical trial. And indeed, it is quite true that the treatments that we have today are based on people's participation in clinical trials. So it's really being a participant in a clinical trial really helps to move everything forward. and getting the very best treatments for people. So we thank all of you who participate in clinical trials, and we hope that this program will make it clearer to you how important clinical trials are for you and for everyone who actually will come after you in terms of their their needs for care. And I know there'll be questions to you, Dr. Mazzo, during the Q&A. And our next speaker is Ms. Haley Dinneman, and Ms. Dinneman is the co-founder and executive director of the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. And she is also a partner on today's program, and she'll be discussing the free programs and services of the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. She'll go over their website, their helpline, and just how to get in touch with triple negative breast cancer. So I'm going to now turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Dinneman.
Thank you so much for that introduction, Dr. Messner. Thank you also to my fellow presenters for your excellent clinical trial updates and for the insights on emerging research and treatment options. It goes without saying that TNBC-specific medical research is extremely important to our foundation. We support research at leading medical institutions and work really hard to inform you about any new developments in the area, including clinical trials. And as Carolyn mentioned before, when you consider enrolling in a clinical trial, you're not only investing in the most cutting-edge treatments for yourself, but you also take the first step towards helping to develop better TNBC treatments for others diagnosed with this disease. This teleconference is one of many programs offered by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. We have many TNBC-specific educational brochures and fact sheets that are available in print and as free downloads from our website. We work hard to make sure that you can find relevant information and practical guidance in all of our materials, so I hope you'll use them to your benefit. Our website, tnbcfoundation.org, offers two free and TNBC-specific clinical trial matching services that are, we are told, they are much easier to navigate than other portals. Our website also has a TNBC news section and online discussion forums. Our other online resources include two private TNBC Foundation Facebook groups, so you can easily connect with thousands of women who are living with TNBC. These resources are here to help you and to remind you that you are not alone. Additionally, we have a number of monthly Zoom meetups for our TNBC community: Metastatic Mondays, Tuesdays with TNBC Friends, and Thursdays with TNBC Friends. And in partnership with Touch, the Black Breast Cancer Alliance, we also have an additional monthly Zoom meetup specifically for Black women. Our community Zoom meetups give you regular opportunities to connect with your peers and with the foundation. If you follow us on Facebook, Instagram, X, or visit our website, you'll get regular updates and be able to register for these and all our other upcoming programs. So once again, thank you for joining us, and I'll now turn the program back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Dinneman. Such a wonderful resource for all of our participants on the call today. Many of you are familiar with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, but for those of you who aren't, it definitely is a go-to place for you to get information, so can't recommend it enough, definitely. We will be sending a SurveyMonkey in about a week after the program, and you'll be getting in the SurveyMonkey an evaluation of the program, but you'll also be getting all the resources that we mentioned on the program, all the websites, so you'll be getting that as well. So it's both, it's an evaluation, but it's also it also has a lot of resources for you to use. Thank you so much, Ms. Dinneman. And our next speaker is Ms. Cassie Spector, and Ms. Spector is our breast and gynecological cancers program coordinator at Cancer Care. And she'll be addressing accessing resources for clinical trials, Cancer Care's free programs and services, Cancer Care's Hope Line, our website, the TNBC Helpline. So I'm going to now turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Spector.
Listener, as mentioned, my name is Cassie Spector, and I'm the Breast and Gynecological Cancers Program Coordinator and an oncology social worker at Cancer Care. My role includes working with those diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer and their families, as well as developing programs and initiatives for our Breast and Gynecological Cancers Program. The Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care have partnered together to ensure those diagnosed with TNBC have access to free psychosocial services and support, as well as information about clinical trials. There are many aspects of a breast cancer diagnosis that could be addressed through psychosocial supportive services, including making informed treatment decisions, such as making the decision to enroll in a clinical trial, quality of life concerns, or communication with one's medical team. The Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation has also generously funded the TNBC Helpline, which provides callers with access to comprehensive services. Some of these services include resource navigation services, counseling, educational workshops, publications, and limited financial assistance. By calling the TNBC Helpline, individuals are connected with an oncology social worker who is aware of the physical, emotional, and practical challenges that may arise when diagnosed with TNBC. Individuals diagnosed with TNBC may also choose to supplement their existing social networks by joining a support group or engaging in counseling. Joining a support group in particular can offer the chance for TNBC patients to speak with one another, gather information, and provide support. Cancer Care offers a TNBC-specific national online support group, which is moderated by an oncology social worker. Such online support groups aim to reduce feelings of loneliness or anxiety, explore new ways of coping, increase feelings of empowerment, and provide practical information about treatment and resources. Talking with other people who have taken part in clinical trials can also reduce the feeling that you are going through it alone. You can register for an online support group through Cancer Care's website, cancercare.org, and then you'll select our services and then support groups. Many hospitals, treatment centers, and nonprofit organizations also offer supportive services. Individuals may also experience practical or financial concerns through one's treatment or when making the decision to participate in a clinical trial. Please know that if you are encountering such financial hardships or concerns, there are organizations that may be able to help you. Cancer Care offers resource navigation services, which is a short-term, strength-based approach for patients and caregivers affected by cancer nationally. A trained specialist will work with the client in connecting them with resources, referrals, and financial assistance. As mentioned, Cancer Care also offers a clinical trial website called mytrialist.org, and this can be a resource to help people find clinical trials and provide support in the clinical trial process. Also, as Ms. Dinnerman mentioned, the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation offers a clinical trial matching service that can make your search easier for clinical trials. Callers can speak with a trained clinical trial navigator by calling 855-731-6036 or by visiting the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation website and clicking on the Research tab, which would click on the Clinical Trials section. If you are interested in learning more about the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care, I encourage you to call the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation Helpline at 877-880-8622. Oncology social workers can share additional information about our services and can also help you explore ways to connect with others, including support groups, financial assistance resources, and clinical trial matching services. It's been a pleasure to be part of this workshop. Thank you so much. I will turn it back to Dr. Messner.
Thank you so much, Ms. Spector. That was just an outstanding presentation and lots of resources for everybody. And again, the SurveyMonkey will include all the phone numbers, websites, everything that you offered to everybody so that you'll be able to have those at your fingertips. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A, and I'm going to ask Rob to explain to all of you how to queue up for questions. And we're going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. Rob?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
And this question is for Dr. Hussain. A huge challenge on trial enrollment is the length of time it takes to be vetted. This is especially problematic in progressing metastatic disease. While waiting for acceptance into a trial, the cancer can really progress. What can be done about this issue? Dr. Hussain, could you address this?
Yeah, that's a really important question, and it's a question that we struggle with, because I can assure whoever asked the question that it's not only the concern of the patient, but also the healthcare team is also very concerned, and they would like to move things as fast as possible. But as we discussed earlier in the workshop, there are multiple steps that are intended to make sure that we are not making any mistakes, we're not including anyone in the wrong trial, or excluding somebody who might benefit from the trial, and we really have to go through those steps. Clinical trials are very strict, and that is a good thing. I tell patients that sometimes we are in a hurry, we want to do everything at the same time, but this is a time that is being well spent in order to make sure that we're headed in the right direction. But I do acknowledge that it is a struggle, and it's a little unsettling sometimes waiting for things to be done before we can start the actual clinical trial.
Thank you so much, Dr. Hussain. And the next question is for Dr. Mazo. Must a person go to the state where the clinical trial is being conducted?
Dr. Mesner, you broke down. May you please repeat the question?
Must a person go to the state where the clinical trial is being conducted?
Not necessarily. So most of the clinical trials are able to be open in different institutions. So you can look at different websites to see where the clinical trial is open. And basically, it's easy to find a location that is close to you. But not necessarily, let's say I am currently in Texas, but not necessarily a trial that opened here has to be conducted here. If we open different subsites and the trial is available in other states, you could participate also out of the state that opened the clinical trial originally.
Question for, thanks so much, and thanks for Dr. Hussain. I participated myself to a clinical trial for TNBC patients about 8 years ago with enzalutamide. I would be interested in understanding how we can follow the results of clinical trials we participated in.
Yeah, so this is really important. So after the participation in the clinical trial happens, patients get treated, and at some point they will finish being on the trial. If it is for early stage trial, then it has a definite period. But if it is for metastatic disease, typically it goes on for most trials with exceptions until there is disease progression. So the patient automatically comes off of the trial. After all the information and all the patients are treated and everything is completed, they go through a very lengthy process of analyzing the data, doing statistics before making sense of those results, and then the results get released, and that typically takes years to have those results available. I would assume the patient that was on this trial is really having this androgen receptor positive triple negative breast cancer, which is very exciting and something that I did not allude to in my discussion, but I think we're understanding that triple negative breast cancer is not all the same disease. It is a multitude of different diseases, and one of them is this LAR or luminal androgen receptor positive subtype, which benefits from androgen blockade.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And for Dr. Mazo, are there clinical trials that look at imaging diagnostic tools for TNBC?
Me, in my position as a medical oncologist, I'm in my institution, I'm not aware of those. However, there are clinical trials that can look into different techniques for imaging to screen or to assess responses to breast cancer. Am I aware of something being exclusively done in this specific subtype? Not to my knowledge, but I also know that there is always new technology coming, and although I might not be aware, I guess with a good search, we can potentially find an option that is a good peer for the listener that is asking this question.
Thank you. And for Dr. Hussain, are there any clinical trials for TNBC in the Southeast region right now, potentially near or in North Carolina?
That's really wonderful. And as my colleague alluded to before, when someone asked do they have to go to the state where the trial or the principal investigator is found? And thankfully, in most of the trials, they do have several locations around the country. Everyone has its own locations that are listed very clearly on the clinicaltrials.gov website. So it depends on what trial we're looking at. Definitely, there are large clinical centers that focus on treating cancer patients all over the country, which is a wonderful thing. So there is for sure clinical trials in that area, but I cannot tell you which trials and whether those fit the person asking or not. I think it has to go through clinicaltrials.gov.
Excellent, and thank you. And then a question for Dr. Mazzo. I don't believe I heard about the risk involved with participating in phase three clinical trials. What are some risks with participating? Dr. Mazzo, could you address this in a general way?
Yes. So very good question. So overall, when we discuss the risk of participating in clinical trials, mainly what we get concerned of and we discuss these in detail with patients is, of course, the potentially of having a side effect for the medication that is being studied. I will also allude to ambiguity in the outcomes, meaning some patients might benefit from a certain treatment, some patients may not benefit from the treatment. And I will also allude to the potential stress that patients can, you know, suffer just because they're doing an experimental therapy. And I will also mention that sometimes in certain populations, cost can be a problem, especially when there is a lot of back and forth to the cancer center. But a good opportunity to overcome that difficulty is discussing with the treatment team if there are any opportunities to sponsor travel and such. But those are, in general, some of the risks that we see with clinical trial participation.
Thank you so much. And the question for Dr. Hussain, how best to determine the correct antigen to target? What is the best test method? What is the current status of CAR T and BiTE?
Yeah, so I did not fully understand the first part of the question, how to best detect the best antigen to study, but I think I have a good idea. The person who asked the question probably wants to ask about the bispecific antibodies therapy and CAR T therapy, which are, for the audience, those are very, very effective therapies that are currently being used in treatment of a multitude of hematologic malignancies with excellent results. And the bispecific antibodies are a promising treatment that can target two different antigens at once. And we do have good molecules, actually, that have very promising results in our phase three trials. An example of that is a medication called zanidatamab, which binds to the HER2 receptor in HER2-positive breast cancer, binds to two markers on the HER2 receptor, and another one called KN-046 is also very promising. For the CAR T cell, CAR T therapy in breast cancer, this is really a treatment that is used also in hematologic malignancies. I don't know that we have had any major breakthroughs in breast cancer. I know that there are ongoing successful early phase trials, especially in the HER2 positive subset, but I'm not aware of particular information when it comes to triple negative breast cancer.
Okay, thank you so much. So this is a question for Dr. Mazzo. It's a long question. I was told that chemo was not beneficial to me, diagnosed at stage one with no lymph node involvement and less than 1/2 inch. And in a procrine feature, and only to have a lumpectomy and 20 rounds of radiation. Will there be a point when this aggressive cancer would benefit from chemo and or further radiation? What might I expect could happen? So, Dr. Mazzo, if you could just address this in a general way.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, yeah, there's a lot of misinformation in the context that will help a medical oncologist to make a decision about chemotherapy treatment being beneficial or not. So depending on the stage and the clinical characteristics of the tumor and the patient that is suffering with triple negative breast cancer, the oncologist might make the decision of foregoing chemotherapy depending on, you know, circumstances that are applied to this specific person. In general, triple negative breast cancer is a type of cancer that responds to chemotherapy in the metastatic setting and also in the neoadjuvant and also in the adjuvant setting to decrease risk of recurrence. But for the listener, I invite him or her to discuss his concerns with a treating oncologist to kind of get more information of what oral steps will be necessary for her care.
Excellent. Thank you. And last question for Dr. Hussain. Can all TNBC patients benefit from PARP inhibitors?
Not all of them. So as we mentioned in the discussion earlier, the PARP inhibitors are effective when patients have mutations, certain mutations, mainly germline mutations, for two well-known genes, the BRCA1 and BRCA2. And now we know that also in PALB2, there is benefit. However, not all comers or not all breast cancer patients harbor those mutations, only a small number. The agreed upon number is something in the range of 10 to 12%. There was a large institution review that came up to 17% of the metastatic cancers, but metastatic breast cancers, but that is even like higher than the average population. So it's a small number still of patients that could benefit from that. Now, there's also interesting information saying that not only germline mutations in those genes, but maybe somatic mutations that are present on the surface of the cancer cells could benefit from that too. So maybe that this will go to include a larger sector of patients after the FDA approved it for that reason. But currently, we do use it in clinic for those patients who have somatic mutations also.
Excellent, thank you. And a question from Ms. Spector. If you could comment on participation in a support group, if you could, people are wondering how that's done or what benefit that is.
Absolutely. So I wanted to mention first that there's different types of support groups. So you can find live support groups, like on Zoom. You can find in-person support groups. And then you can also find online message board groups. So the group that I mentioned before, the triple negative breast cancer group that Cancer Care has, is a message board format, and it's moderated by an oncology social worker. So in terms of the groups, the benefits are, like I mentioned before, is really helping with talking with others who understand what you're going through. So oftentimes I'll hear that support systems, even no matter how much support you may have, people may not fully understand what you're really going through. But by joining a support group, you'll get to meet or get to speak with or message people who really do get what you're going through and understand that. And that can just help in terms of reducing anxiety or just feeling less isolated, feeling less alone. So a support group can be really a great way to exchange information as well. Someone may be experiencing similar side effects, and it might help normalize some of that for you as well, or just the emotional impact of the diagnosis. So a support group can be really helpful in just connecting with others and really feel less isolated and less alone.
Thank you so much. And now I'm going to ask our speakers to provide a takeaway. So I'm going to, Dr. Hussain, Dr. Mazzo, and Ms. Spector. So I'll start with Dr. Hussain.
Yeah, I think that overall the pace of progress when it comes to triple negative breast cancer is very promising. And I think focusing on identifying markers that signal potential benefits from certain therapies is key here so that we can deliver the right tailored therapy to every patient. And I'm personally very excited mainly about ADCs or antibody drug conjugates. I think this really opens up the door to using different payloads or chemotherapy agents and different targets and different linkers. And I believe that those molecules, ADCs, are quite modular and a lot to be gained by manipulating their different parts. So I believe those molecules have so much potential to make a notable impact on PMBC, hopefully in the very near future.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Hussain. And Dr. Masso?
So I will leave our audience telling them not to be afraid of asking questions, not to be afraid of participating in clinical trials. As I mentioned during my presentations, clinical trials are the way that we move forward and that we make progress in cancer care. And both investigators and patients have a role in moving the needle and making cancer, you know, less difficult and sometimes, you know, lethal disease. So I invite you all to ask questions, to advocate for you, and to be part of the fight.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Ms. Spector, your takeaway?
Thank you. My takeaway would be really to know that you're not alone and know that there are supports available, your treatment team, your medical team, organizations like Cancer Care and the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. Just know that you're not alone and there are supports available for you. If you're not sure whether you'd like to enter a clinical trial or not, know that there are people that are there to talk through it with you and ask questions and be able to really get the support that you need to figure out what's going to be best for you.
Excellent. Thank you. I want to thank all of our participants and our speakers today. This has been a phenomenal program. Our participants asked really great questions, and our speakers, of course, were terrific in responding to the questions. We have many more questions that we could not take, so I want to comment on that. For those of you who have a question that was in queue and that was taken, nevertheless, please go back to your treating healthcare team. They know you the best, and ask your question again. You've learned a lot from today's program. So take what you've learned and take that question back to your treating healthcare team. And for those of you who have a question that you've not been able to ask, again, take your question and ask that question of your treating healthcare team. Remember, they know you the best. They have your records right in front of them, and they can be very helpful to you in addressing any questions you have about your treatment and about participating in clinical trials as well. And I think, as Dr. Maso said and all of the speakers have said, participating in clinical trials really does move the bar forward in terms of the treatment of triple-negative breast cancer, all cancers, actually. The willingness of patients to participate in clinical trials has been a very important part of all the new treatments that we keep hearing about. And it's the patients and their physicians working together to move that bar forward. Also, I do want to mention one thing that's important, I think. You know, usually you can reach someone during the day when you call a doctor's office, but it's really important that you also, consider who do you call evenings, weekends, and holidays. Those seem to be the most difficult times to reach your healthcare team. So I would advise all of you to ask your healthcare team, when are they available on evenings, weekends, and holidays, and what number you can call. That's really important. So again, I'd like to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.